Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Two blokes trying to normalise open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. Episode 17 of the Proper Mental Podcast, and my guest this time around is Mick Coyle. So Mick is a senior correspondent at the Bauer Media Group for the Northwest, and he's a presenter of various radio shows across the channels that they look after. One of those shows is Mental Health Monday, which, as the name suggests, comes out every single Monday, in which Mick chats to different guests and explores different aspects of mental health and mental wellness. The show's been going for years. He's sort of 200 episodes deep. He releases every single week. And his guest list is like a who's who in mental health. It's fantastic. Just the Monday just gone, the bank holiday, he had Jake Quickenden and Harry Judd. More recently, he's had Katie Piper. He's had Dr. Alex. He also speaks to people from the government, you know, and the MPs that are supposed to be, you know, helping us with this sort of stuff. People from the Samaritans, people from Calm. He chats to people from local community projects, from charities, and a lot of people with like lived experience as well come on and share their stories with him. And it's just brilliant. You know, he covers all aspects of mental health. He really has done an episode on everything. It's really inclusive and really relatable. And, you know, you can use his back catalogue almost as like a resource. You know, if you had any thoughts or feelings about medication or about an eating disorder or about anxiety, you could look down his list and find an episode about it. And yeah, it's just brilliant. It's a really good show. It's an important show. He's won some awards. He won the Mind Media Awards for the show in 2018 and 2019. And then Mick himself has been nominated for a few by Mind along the way. And I think that just shows how well thought of he is within the field and how good that show is. And like I say, I think it's really, really important. Comes out every week, no matter what, you know, and we live in a world where, you know, there's a lot of hashtags and monthly awareness drives and stuff like that. And then you've got people like Mick who are just putting his content out every single week, regardless of what month it's supposed to be. And yeah, I just think it's a brilliant show. And he's a lovely bloke. He's kind of like the UK lead in broadcast journalism in the mental health space. So it just made perfect sense for me to get him on for a chat with me. And yeah, it's really, really good. We talk all about Mental Health Mondays and how the show came about, you know, where it's going, what he'd like to achieve with it, and, you know, some of the standout moments over the last couple of years. We talk about modern society and the impact that has on mental health. We talk about being kind and then being kinder, which is a term that Mick calls aggressive kindness. And that's brilliant. That's just a really cool way to look at it. He chats about mental health and how he tries to instill stuff in his kids to prepare them for further on later in life. And yeah, it's just a really, really good chat. The amount of people Mick has spoken to and the amount of time he spent in this world, it just gives him a fantastic insight. He really knows his stuff. He really cares. You know, he couldn't keep doing what he's doing for so long if he didn't. And yeah, that all comes out in the chat. It's really, really cool. And if you'd like to connect more with Mick, well, the best place to do it is to listen to Mental Health Monday, which comes out every single week on all the usual podcast places. And you can get hold of him on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. If you want to connect with me for the podcast, at Proper Mental Podcast on pretty much all social media channels. Instagram's probably your best bet to get hold of me. And yeah, you can grab this anywhere you like. And if you'd like to leave us a review and subscribe and do all that stuff, that would be great. So this is coming out on a Thursday. I think it's going to be the last one of my double releases before I go back to just Mondays for a little bit. Although I have got quite a lot of content stacking up and I really want to get to episode 20, 25, something like that. So I might go back to doubles for another couple of weeks. We're just going to see how that goes. But yeah, thank you for all the support. Thank you for listening. And yeah, thank you for all the lovely feedback. It's been great. So here we go. Episode 17 of the Proper Mental Podcast with Mick Coyle.
with you, Tom.
Fantastic. We'll just jump straight in. I'm already recording. I'll double check. Yeah. Okay, so here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. And my guest today is journalist and broadcaster, Mr. Mick Coyle. How are you today, mate?
Good, thanks, Tom. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very good. Very, very good. Thank you. I suppose I'd like to start with a bit of a congratulations, Mick, really, mate, because I believe you've just hit 200 episodes of your radio show and podcast, Mental Health Mondays. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we started back in January 2017. We did it weekly through Radio City Talk and as a podcast. And yeah, we just kept going. We just kept finding more and more people to speak to. So it was a strange one because we kind of got to episode 100 and we thought, crikey, what a monumental thing. And then straight away, we're at episode 200. So amazing. Amazing that we were able to get so many conversations going.
Yeah.
Amazing to be able to get a response that people said, oh, it's okay, this. We'll speak to this sort of this organization and this podcast and this bloke with a microphone. And then also the sort of guests we've been able to get, particularly recently as we've sort of nationalized some of the content that we're doing, has been absolutely spot on, so that people now will say, oh, thanks for getting me on. I love what you're doing with the program, and so on and so forth. So that's really positive as well. But yeah, it's there wherever you get your podcasts, Mental Health Monday, check it out.
Yeah. And I think the beauty of having that many episodes and that many people is that, as well as being something people can listen to weekly, it becomes kind of like a resource, you know? So if you're like experiencing something or want to know more about something, you can literally just scroll down until you find the particular topic, right? And just have a listen to what's been said and what's been discussed.
Yeah. And that, to be honest, that's part of the thing whereby I almost don't quite know what to do with that, because I almost feel like I've got this sort of resource now. People who'd often spoken for the first time, but many of the conversations that I've had, I'm thinking nobody's spoken openly about this. You know, young people talking about self-harm, you know, older people talking about suicidal experiences, all of those sorts of things. Those conversations are being had for the first time, and were often had, you know, in the early days of the podcast. And I think that's always been the drive to break those boundaries and to sort of smash those taboos, the sort of conversations you don't think you're allowed to have them, because actually people respond to them really positively.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when we're talking about mental health as well, you kind of, for want of a better expression, we kind of have stuff like depression and anxiety are almost like the poster children for whatever of mental health. But of course, it's multifaceted. There's all sorts of stuff going on to get that variation. You know, there's going to be a lot of people out there who feel like maybe there's a lot of mental health awareness, but not around the thing that they have that they're suffering with, right? So to have that variation is huge.
Yeah, and that was one of the things sort of editorially that we decided to sort of shift on the program, that it started out where we were almost thinking, right, who can we get to talk about their mental health, who will be open? And that was great. But actually, what I became aware of, that I'm not a counselor, right? So I'm not trained in that. So if you come on my program and you describe your experiences and so on and so forth, if that doesn't come with signposting, links to services, maybe wider understanding of an issue, it's not actually any help to you, let alone to the listeners. So that was one of the things that I was aware of, that I'd had some conversations, not that have been sort of cut short or that didn't quite offer enough, because I don't think we ever pushed it that far. But I thought, if there is longevity in this, it has to be a much more rounded conversation. So not to take the edges off, but to make it a little bit less raw, and to make it a little bit more safe for people, because I think that would be the other thing. If people were to invest in the program and invest in Mental Health Monday and those sorts of stories, I'd want them to come away with not just knowledge that you can talk about mental health and this is maybe how you talk about mental health, but actually I also wanted them to come away thinking, and because I've heard these conversations, I also know about how to find local services near me through the Hub of Hope. I also know the number off the top of my head for the Samaritans. I also know that if you text shout to 85258, somebody will text you back. And those are those wider things that I want people to get from it as well, that normalize the conversation around mental health, that it's not just here are a series of taboo conversations. It's actually, here are a series of normal conversations. Here's an infrastructure that sits around it. If you relate to this conversation, here's where you can turn to next. So that's what I really put a strong emphasis on, that I'm going to say recently, but actually the last 150 episodes.
Yeah, you know,
to make sure that everything comes with, the outro is always the same, and it's always, and I don't think I can do it off the top of my head, but if you want to find services, type your postcode into hubofhope.co.uk. If you want to text somebody, text shout to 85258 and a qualified trained respondent will get back to you. Call the Samaritans at 116 123. I think I've got that right number. Speak to your GP. And if it's an emergency and someone's life is in danger, call 999. Now, it shouldn't be up to me, Don, to be telling people that. Everyone should know that and should have known that from when they were growing up. In the same way that if you're playing footy in the street and somebody breaks their ankle, you either ring the mum or dad or you call 999. You know that because that's just what you do. With mental health, we don't know these things. We've never been taught these things. So I try and make sure that signposting is absolutely crucial in the middle of it.
Yeah, that is such a really cool way of thinking about it, because we should know these things. And I often say with mental health, we kind of treat all these different things as it's either something you have or something you don't. But everyone's got a mind, and you don't know what's further down the road. And we know that if you want to try and avoid maybe heart disease, then, you know, doing some sort of exercise and looking at your diet is the right way to kind of load the deck in your favor, so to speak. But with mental health, we don't do that. It's very reactive rather than proactive, isn't it?
Yeah. And we did I forget which episode it was, but we did, within a year of doing Mental Health Monday, we did the biggest ever mental health radio show. We did a 24-hour show.
Wow.
Sort of all the way through. And I had this like notebook in front of me. I had all these stats and things like facts and stuff like that. Jake Mills from Chasing the Stigma was in the studio with me for the whole time. And at the start I went, oh, here are the facts you need to know. 1 in 3, 1 in 7, blah, 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 blah. And he just kiboshed right literally in the first 10 minutes. He just went, Mick, forget all of those. He says, it's not 1 in 3. It's not 1 in 4. It's everybody has mental health. And that's the starting point. And actually, when you start thinking about it from that point of view, you start thinking, oh, actually, maybe if someone's going through stress, anxiety, periods of depression, actually, that's not just them fitting into a box, the box of being 1 in 3, 1 in 4, whatever it is. It's their turn to experience it. And actually, because I am a human being, and because I have a mental health awareness, I can now empathize with that person and I can understand them. And actually I can get and drag them away from that period of time in an educated way, in a trained way, and in an empathetic way as well, that you empathize with that person because you've experienced it too, because you're not looking at someone who is a 1 in 3 or a 1 in 4. You're actually looking at a human being who is the 4 in 4. You know, and you've had a little bit of that experience too, or you know someone close to you who has. So let's treat everybody like human beings right from the off, instead of trying to pigeonhole them, you know, with labels and kind of go, oh, depression now, is it right? Now you're the 1 in 4. Tick.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is unhelpful. I think that's unhelpful.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, you know, human first before anything, isn't it? And I suppose, you know, you mentioned relatability before, you know, that people get that from your show rather than, you know, just a series of people like sharing their experiences. And those experiences, of course, they're valid and there is a, you know, there is a space for them. But yeah, people aren't necessarily going to want to tune into that every single week. And then, of course, you're not going to, you know, get the reach that you want. But by having that relatability, then, you know, that's when the people who maybe aren't, I suppose, getting included in the statistics or don't know what's going on with themselves, that they can kind of feel then that they can say, oh, well, that sounds familiar. I'll have a look on that website and I'll see if I can speak to someone, because what Mick's talking about, that sounds a bit like it could be talking to me. Might, you know, can help people kind of figure out why they're struggling or what they're struggling with, because a lot of people don't know, eh? A lot of people.
No, but I think that's about context as well, that actually you might have somebody who has an experience and their experience, their true life experience might be that they had depression and anxiety, but they started, let's say, open water swimming. And actually, as a result of their open water swimming, they found that a lot of their problems disappeared. And they're a big advocate now for getting out and about and exercising and encouraging people to exercise. And actually them telling their story, it's powerful, it's emotional, it will connect with many people. But also for some other people, they'll go, I can't start open water swimming, I can't swim. I don't own a pair of trainers to start running. My life is too busy. I don't feel confident to step out. I don't own sports clothes to even, you know, even think about taking part in any kind of activity at all. So I think that's the other thing, that when you have these wider conversations around mental health, you've got to do so in a way which then offers context. I've had some people say in the past over, for instance, and this often comes up, medication, where some people would say, I didn't want medication. I didn't want to be medicated. It wasn't right for me, or I was medicated and it didn't do me any good. Now, for that person, that might be true and that may be right, and they are well within their rights to express that. But it's wrong for me then to say to everybody, those meds guys, bin them, because look at this guy, start open water swimming and you'll be absolutely fine. That's not right for a lot of people. Medication, and this is one of the taboos within the taboo around mental health. For me, a lot of people need that medication to get them out of bed in the morning. And actually, we need to sort of, I think, as broadcasters in that field, understand that one person's success might be another person's, stumble, if you like. But actually, when you then have a wider conversation with a professor or a doctor or a university who then explains how the meds work, you suddenly go, oh yeah, actually, for a lot of people, this is really going to work. This might be the first step. You might be able to walk away from it in the future, and that's great. But you've got to make people aware of the wider spectrum, because there's nothing worse than tackling a stigma by just throwing stigma onto something else. Yeah. You've got to open up every little box as it comes your way.
Yeah, very much so. I like to think of mental health as kind of like everyone's got their individual puzzle, and you've got to work out which pieces you need to put together. And one of those pieces might be swimming for me, and it might not be swimming for you. And it's just a different puzzle that we're trying to put together. Yeah, so right. Where does your passion for mental health come from? You know, what's the idea behind the show when you started it off?
It started off because we were more and more aware that we were kind of having the conversations anyway. And we were starting to hear those stats about suicide figures and people being affected, the impact on the economy of negative mental health. I was sort of having these conversations almost in a slightly apologetic way, like going, here's another of these conversations now where someone's going to talk about depression. And I thought, hang on a minute, if it is as big an issue as people are talking about, and the pressures on services are such, then why aren't we having an open an honest conversation about it? And actually, in doing so, Mental Health Monday might not be the greatest name in the world, but we put Mental Health Monday on the title because we were talking about mental health on a Monday. We weren't trying to like trick people into thinking it was like the happy hour or like the sort of the fun time gang or anything like that. No, we're going to talk about mental health because I think it needed to be sort of stated that we were going to do that, because then people would understand it. And also down the line, and I think it's kind of proved itself in regard to this, that people would look at it and go, oh yeah, that's what it is. They talk about mental health.
Yeah.
And they do it every Monday. And I think that's become that's a great sort of call to arms, if you like, when we've got like Mental Health Awareness Week coming around and you think, well, it doesn't matter to me because every week is Mental Health Awareness Week. What are you doing for Stress Awareness Day? I don't know. I've probably had 15 conversations this year already about that. Here are a load of them. And I think that's one of the things that people speak really positively about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, Mental Health Awareness Week, it will just kind of come and go in a flurry of hashtags. And a lot of those hashtags will have nothing to do with mental health and probably more about selling products or gyms or something. But that's really, really interesting. So I suppose like the show is, if it's 200 episodes, that's, you know, that's a good few years, about 4 years, something like that. And if you think of mental health awareness, yes, it's growing, it's getting bigger all the time, but maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it probably wasn't that, it's not, certainly wouldn't have been as common as it is now for people to be having these conversations, right? Do you kind of feel
it was, I got a sense that it was starting, or I knew people who were willing to have the conversation. That would be the way I would describe it. I knew probably 8 or 10 people who I thought, if I just said, we're going to do a thing about mental health, will you speak to us? That they would say yes. And they did. And with that, I think we just sort of, I'm not going to say we set, you know, a trend or anything like that, but we just caught that first wave of people actually opening up for the first time. So we were always seen as being almost like at the front line of that.
Yeah.
So that was, January 2017 was when we first started speaking about it. And we're in a much different place now. But I see that as like a positive thing. And I also think that the show has sort of adapted and sort of moved with that, that now people see it as a almost like a hub of information and previous conversations. I've never actually listened back to like really, really old episodes to make sure that they still stack up now as they probably should, but they're all sort of marked out as sort of where they are on the journey. So you get a sense. But I think in the main, we've kept the same sort of vibe and themes in regards of the language that we use and the way that we talk about certain things. We've managed to keep that the same while at the same time broadening out maybe those wider signposting messages.
Yeah, sure. And have you had anyone that really stands out, Mick, or any particular conversations, ones that really kind of, you know, gave you maybe a bit of a eureka moment, you know, like someone's onto something here and maybe, you know, not enough people are talking about trying this method or, you know, what's going on here or anything that kind of jumped out? To be honest,
so I would say every single episode, there is some line in it or something that somebody says that makes me go, I'm having that. You know, when you hear like, says something smart about the football, you go, I'm having that stat. I'm going to use that stat in the, you know, in the office on Monday. I get that virtually every single week where people say something that makes me go, oh, right. There's a couple. The first one is always two from Jake Mills. The first one is always everyone has mental health. And the second one was he used a phrase and he says, how would I know? So he was talking about a suicide attempt that he tried to make, which thankfully did not prove successful. And then on reflecting on it, he was kind of saying, where are those services? Who should I have spoken to? What should I have done? But then he said, how would I have known? And I thought, yeah, that's right. How would he have known? He wouldn't have known because there's no adverts on the TV that says, if you're thinking of taking your own life, you know, here are the steps that you can take. You know, there's no lesson in school that says, here's the spectrum of mental health you are on. And these are the sort of, you know, pitfalls you need to look out for along your mental health journey. He would never have known. And actually that very much stays with me when people feel like they've failed in their own mental health. They should have seen a sign. They should have spotted that a friend or a colleague or a brother was feeling suicidal and it was too late to do anything about it. But then how would they have known? How would you know that there was a problem if you had no understanding in it? And actually one of the things that sometimes people say to me is, if I'd have listened to your program before X, Y, or Z had occurred, I'd have known more. And it's heartbreaking to hear that. But then for a lot of people, their first interaction when it comes to mental health is a service that they've had to reach out to because a problem has occurred.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that I always sort of try and frame a conversation around, that we start right at the start. But that was based on that phrase, how would I know? And I think another one, the other thing that stuck with me as well was about sympathy and empathy, that actually sympathy is fine, but actually empathy is something which will make a real difference in life. To sympathize, oh, it's a shame. But actually empathy is, I've been there. Do you want to talk about it? Here's my experience. Let's see if it works for you, or let's see if we can find your own experience. Empathy is a very difficult thing, different thing. Maybe it's more difficult to deal with. But actually, I think it makes a huge difference, not just how you deal with people when it comes to mental health, but how you deal with people when it comes to stuff, all walks of life, from, you know, internet trolls to, you know, somebody who's raging at you in a you know, supermarket car park. Empathizing and looking for empathy in everybody, I think makes a huge difference as well. That always really stuck with me too.
Yeah. I think that's probably something that's quite missing from modern society, is that general being, showing empathy towards each other and towards other people. I always think of it as like when you're driving, isn't it? And if you like, say you make a mistake and you slip the gear and you kind of go, oops, silly me. And then the guy in front of you does it and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh. You know, it's like the exact same thing and you just react different because it's someone else. And I think, maybe it is something to work on. But a lot of what you're talking about then is, I suppose, stigma around mental health. It's because if you haven't experienced it, it's very hard to understand it. But then, of course, when it starts happening to you because you've never experienced it before, then you don't know what's happening. Hey, you don't know what you're about to go through or what's happening to you. The reason this podcast is called Proper Mental, that's a direct quote. You know, when I was poorly a few years ago, I didn't know what's happening. I genuinely thought I was going mad. I thought I was going proper mental. You know, it was, I didn't know any of these things existed. I didn't know about mental health awareness and all that sort of stuff. So to have as much as these conversations out there for people to hear and learn from is super important. Yeah.
And I think it's the same when you get TV shows. Hollyoaks is a good example. Coronation Street has done it recently as well, where you almost want to create those moments where someone might go, oh, this is like that bit with the guy off Coronation Street. And it only takes that for them to go, what did he do? Or what happened next in that? Almost to make it culturally significant that somebody might have these sorts of feelings. Whereas, you know, in the past, it was bad event happens, man feels suicidal, man goes to hotel room and commits an act using, I don't want methods, but commits an act, and then everyone's sad at his funeral the next day, and you think, well, that's probably quite a neat little way of doing it if you're writing a script where you've got to just get something in a film in 1987 and quickly sort of wrap up that character. But it's completely unrepresentative of actually someone's experience of maybe suicidal thoughts, the pathway that they've been on, and so on and so on. So I think we've had sort of negative stigma drilled into us by, mums who have got sort of whose mental health suffer after giving birth. Now, I'd be surprised if mums now say, no, I was absolutely fine and there was no issues. Like, would say that would surprise me if they went, I was absolutely fine throughout, because I think the normal thing now is for people to go, well, actually, I did have one or two particular issues. And that can be a diagnosed issue, or that can just be sort of the stresses and strains, which give you sort of a relatively low period. But again, TV shows in the past, you'd have like the mum crying the baby and, you know, putting it in a dustbin outside or leaving it on the car as it drives. You know, sort of straight, like I can't cope moment. Whereas actually, loads of parents have had the I can't cope moment, but it doesn't come with like Hollywood glitz and Hollywood glamour. It doesn't come with those dramatic moments. For a lot of people, it just comes with a lot of tears, a lack of sleep, a moment of breakdown. And it's almost mundane in terms of you wouldn't watch necessarily TV shows where that was happening all the time.
Yeah.
But it's important that if you are going to represent postnatal depression, for instance, through TV shows, that you do so in a way which represents the actual journey, both in and out, that then allows a mum, can happen to dads as well, to recognize and say, oh, I recognize that, or I'm starting to see something of myself in that. And I think when those sorts of things happen, they don't come with the glitz and glamour of the Hollywood moments, and they don't come with the take my baby away from, you know, I'm trying to think of what you'd write in
yeah, like I know exactly what you script. Mean. Yeah.
But actually you've got to have that in. And I think this is about the relatability. If you can get that nailed down, then I think there's so much more credibility because it's real and it's lived. And I think what a lot of the organizations do now, I know ITV do it, I know Channel 4 do it as well. They'll often speak to mind, they'll speak to the mind representations, you know, media team, who will then go, right, here's the advice that we would give you if you're going to do a story about suicide, if you're going to do a story about whatever it might be, because they can actually go, right, okay, well, let's speak to these people. They'll tell you what it was like. And then, of course, the scriptwriter will use certain elements and pull different things together to give it a dramatic arc, because that's what they're in, you know, the thing for. But it will be based on reality instead of being based on, you know, what a scriptwriter will churn out at 3 a.m. just to get rid of that character or to move that character's arc on a little bit.
Yeah, because I suppose with that extreme, it kind of paints a picture that us as the viewer is sat at home and we're all completely fine. And then the only version of anything is this completely unrealistic thing on screen, and there's nothing in between, and no one is ever going to experience anything other than that. Yeah. Yeah. That's dead interesting. And I suppose, like, so obviously there's loads of different areas of mental health. And if we're going to drill into it a little bit, I think for the purposes of this conversation, as we are both, both male and white and of a similar age and live in a similar part of the world, it makes sense to talk about men's mental health in this instance. Do you notice like almost trends? Because we know the stats are going up, you know, and you spoke to a lot of different people. Do you notice a lot of things that keep coming up that seem to be affecting people and maybe pushing them into like one direction or making them feel, feel like their things aren't right and kicking things off for them?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. I think firstly is the sense that it's sort of like, it's like a before and after moment, that everything was fine before, then an event happened, and then everything was bad. Whereas I think actually what you see more when you speak to people is that their journeys, their pathways were going in a certain direction, but they weren't equipped, educated, trained to understand what those problems were. Often that comes from working too hard. Sometimes it's drinking too much, not looking after yourself, spending too much time away from the family, and so on and so forth. That often comes around when you hear about someone's journey before a particular moment that then made them change. But I always say with men that they're supposed to be so hard to reach and speak out, and they don't like speaking about their mental health. But like, I've never counted, but look at the number of men who do speak, you know, and the men's sheds, Journeymen on the World's a good example. Just recently, or relatively recent, sort of really expanded their services there. There are loads. Sean's Place has got loads of different men talking about men, and I often find that the men, once they do start speaking about their mental health, almost become like evangelical about their mental health. So there'll be like a men's shed where it's like, come in here and we'll fix some gates. Come in here, we'll play five a side. And it starts out, come in here because it's associated with Liverpool Football Club or Everton Football Club. Oh, I'll come in then, okay, because it's that. But actually, as soon as they do that, they then go, oh yeah, it's Liverpool, it's Everton, it's fixing things, it's five a side or whatever. But actually, the thing that I enjoy the most is when we sit around and we start talking about how we're feeling. And actually, as soon as they get given permission to talk about that, you can't shut them up. I mean, you've had them on the podcast, you know, yourself. I've certainly had them in my studio where they go. And I think it's actually a nonsense that men don't want to speak about mental health. The nonsense is in presuming that men don't want to talk about mental health. The skill is for psychologists and for organizations. It's about finding the permissions and giving the permission to say, okay, now you're free. Now you can talk about what you want to talk about when you're ready to talk about it. I think that's one of the themes that really comes through. I think there are much wider sort of issues in play, and I don't want to get into the politics of it as such, but I think there is a world that we have created which doesn't work for quite a lot of people. And it's a world of 9 to 5. It's a world of bills and mortgages, taxes, and all of those things. I'm not saying don't pay your taxes, but what I'm saying is it's a one size fits all. So what are you going to do if that doesn't fit you, or if you feel that that's not right? Because at the moment the system essentially says, well, there must be something wrong with you if you don't want to adapt to the system. But if you want to go, well, I don't want a job, you know, you're not allowed to say in 2021 in the UK, I don't want a job.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to say that at all. If you were saying, I don't want a job, but what I do want to do is I want to go and work as a park ranger. I'll throw up some fences. I'll go and catch some wildlife. I'll cut down some trees if you need me to. I'll plant some new ones if you want me to do that. If I do that, you'll let me stay in my caravan on site for the next 3 weeks. And after that, I'll move on and go and do that. So, you know what I mean? I'm sort of imagining a slightly different life there. But you're not allowed to have that life. Nobody wants to give you that. I'm not saying that that would be, you know, that would cure people's problems or anything like that. But there is a thing of you leave school, you get your qualifications, you get a job, and then you get a better job, and then you have a family, then you buy, you know, you got your house, and you pay off your mortgage, and then you retire. And that's, quote, the right way of doing things. But I just think that people just drop out of that at every single time. So the fewer people do A-levels that do GCSEs. So what about all those people who did their GCSEs but then didn't do their A-levels? Like, have they failed at that point? Like, have they got an option to move on? Fewer people get a degree than have A-levels. So those who've just got A-levels, I mean, are they not as good as the other people? Those other people then who got a job, was it a job that paid you 10 grand a year? Was it a job that paid you 150 grand a year? Well, if it paid 150 grand a year, you must be a better person. You know, your life must be more fulfilled because you earn more money. And all the while I'm thinking, well, that can't be right. And at the same time, and this is, you know, come back to male suicide rates. If 30 or 40 or 50 years into that life experience, it's taken away from you, marriage breakdown, job loss, whatever it is, where suddenly you don't have the family anymore or you don't have the house anymore, and you've lost the thing that you've been told that your life has been built for and your existence has been built for, that people then get a sense that there's meaning, there's nothing meaningful in their life. And I think that's, we've got to be so careful of that. And that's not me to say, you know, we should all live in a big hippie commune. But I think we should allow pathways for people to sort of explore what they want to do and who they want to be as human beings. A good example of this one is through the pandemic with the arts. We've seen the value of people who just want to play the piano, who just want to play. Now, who are we to say that you shouldn't be allowed to do that? Of course, you've then got to find a way to eat, you know, pay for things and food and all that kind of stuff. But at the moment, we have this. I think we have narrow pathways for everybody. I think there's this is how your life is supposed to pan out. And if it doesn't pan out like that, it's because you've done something wrong. There's something wrong with you, or that you didn't play the game correctly. There's that famous phrase, and here's one of those things that always stick you. Stick with me. Even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat.
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
So I think we've got to find those journeys and allow people to explore what it is that they're interested in. And it might well be that they, you know, they get a job in a cafe and they work a few hours a week, and actually their real passion is painting. And guess what? They never ever sell a painting, and everyone thinks they're rubbish, and nobody ever buys one. But at least they had that opportunity to do what they wanted to do, and they got their enjoyment from it in that time. And I think that's one of the things that I'd really sort of advocate for. And I don't know how you do it, because you'd have to change the whole system of how everything works, but allow people to go on a journey and allow them to say, you know what, there's no such thing as a cliff edge whereby you get to the edge of something and then you either fall off or you come back. You can just get to the cliff edge and slowly meander back down the path and head off in a different direction. You know, we create these narratives about, you know, you work up to a certain point, and when you get to that point, then you retire and you fall off, you know, the edge of the cliff, you know, in a metaphorical sense. But it doesn't have to be like that. You can just have your roller coaster where you go, great, everything was going great, you're at 40, and then, you know, maybe you had a marriage breakdown, so things weren't going so well. But then new relationship, new job, new opportunity came your way, so you went up. You know, that there will be peaks and troughs. And when the peaks are there, that's great. Give you an opportunity to build your resilience, to move forward. When the troughs come, at least then you're equipped to think, right, I've got the skill set to move on. I've got an action plan, if you like. I've got the inbuilt resilience to find a way forward now. And at the moment, it feels like we live in a epic fail or huge success society. And to me, that's a bit of a nonsense. And it's almost too, it's like the Messi versus Ronaldo football thing. Who's the best? Guess what? It don't matter. Yeah. Guess what? You can just look at them both and go, aren't they both great? And you got to pick one. You guess what? You don't have to pick one. you don't have to pick one at all. You can actually say that you love them both and they're both as good as each other, or you enjoy certain aspects of both of their games, which means that you could never decide, because guess what? You don't have to decide. You never have to decide, because that's not the way life works. But you've everything's got to be black or white now.
Yeah.
Your life is a success. Your life's a failure. You've got a great job. Your job stinks. Your job might stink, but you might get paid a load of money, right? So at the moment in this society, that creates this weird paradox, doesn't it? He's got lots of money, but he's not happy. Yeah. Like people don't understand that's a situation that shouldn't be the case. Like, we should be able to look at that and go, you know, oh yeah, he's got a great job, but it pays very badly. Well, that's fine. Never mind that. Are they happy? You know, when you meet somebody from school in the street, you say, what are you doing now? You never say to them, how are you? Are you happy?
Yeah.
You always go, what are you doing? Why? Because you want to define them and then yourself by what their job is.
Yeah.
Which is a really strange thing to do. But I think we've just been bred to think like that.
Yeah.
To think in those terms.
Yeah, completely.
But that's a wholesale change. And that's this thing of mental health in everything. And everybody has mental health. We've all got to change the way we think about things, for me, to make a difference in that. Because I think we've just been built into this system of success and failure. And you're part of one until you're part of the other. And if you're part of failure to success, then you're the hero. Oh, you came back from nowhere. But if you're a success and you turn to a failure, it's game over. You know, it's the end of that. That narrative. It doesn't have to be the end of a narrative at all. It's just the start of a different narrative. And I think we're all on a journey.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, always chasing that perfect life, you know, that eternal happiness that doesn't exist. Well, if you're chasing something that, you know, you're never going to find, then you're always going to feel like a failure. You know, you're never going to get there. And, you know, maybe we don't need to be necessarily happy. Happy is an emotion. And would you, just like all other emotions, we should feel it sometimes and other times not. And, you know, maybe something like, you know, just being content. Maybe that's a nice way to feel, because you can be content and still be unhappy and happy and, you know.
So I do a thing with my kids now to sort of instill sort of mental health awareness into them. And that's every day when we sit around the table, well, I'll always say, how are you feeling today, marks out of 10? And that's them. And they'll go, oh, such a buddy wouldn't play with me in the playground, so I only feel like a 6. So you say, oh, who did you play with instead? Such a buddy, such and such a buddy. What did you play instead? They'll say, oh yeah, we played, you know, hopscotch or whatever. And I say, you're 24. You want to go and get a proper job? No, don't say that. they'll talk about, you know, so we'll talk about, how did you feel? How did it make you feel? And how might you feel later if next time you invite them to play, they want to play with you, or you want to play with us, whatever it is. Or I've got a 2-year-old who loves telling me that he's a 2 out of 10 because he is 2. So therefore 2 must be the best number. So he's I'm 2 out of 10 today. I'm really happy. And then she's my daughter, who's now 6. She said to me, I only feel like a 5 today, Dad. Like, but she proactively said that. So yeah. She had registered in her own mind that she didn't feel very happy. But rather than just then sit on that unhappiness and think, I'm just unhappy now, she was able to communicate and articulate that she was only a 5 out of 10, which allowed them me to have a conversation about why she felt like that. And it turned out that, I think, spelling test didn't go according to plan. She hadn't slept very well the night before. And you can suddenly contextualize what those feelings are, and also spot when you think, well, actually, I felt, and I do it with myself, my wife as well, well, actually, I only feel like a 5 today, and I felt like a 4 yesterday, and I felt like a 4 the day before. So actually, what's going on at the moment now? Am I drinking too much caffeine late at night? Am I sleeping enough? Am I working too hard? Am I checking my emails when I shouldn't be checking my emails? Am I on social media too much? Have I been able to sort of get out and about of the house recently? You could then spot those trends. And you go, well, actually, no, I've not done any of those things. I've been eating really badly. I've been drinking too much. And actually, you can then measure that against how you feel then in 3 weeks' time. So it's not about finding that sort of moment, wow, that great moment where everything is perfect. It's actually about maintaining, I think, the 7s and the 8s, and knowing that when it falls down to a 6 and then a 5, you then know how to get back up to the 6s, the 7s, the 8s, the 9s. And then the 10s will come, and the 10s will be great. And there'll be great memories. And you can look back at them and thinking, great, that was a 10 moment for me. What will be those next 10 moments be for me. So that's the thing I always try and do. And I build that into my kids as well, hopefully.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I like that. I like that a lot. I've got two similar sort of age. So that's one of them things when you think I'm having that. That's my one for this conversation. Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned about society then as well, because something we've got alongside that of a lot of people essentially sort of, you know, round pegs in square holes, really, like you were saying. We've got a culture where we have maybe a lot of people that are unhappy with the lives they live in. And there's a lot of self-medicating going on because our culture is lots of, you know, like drinking and all these sorts of things. But all these things stop us doing what you just said and having that self-awareness to being able to tune in and say, how do I feel in myself and where is this going? And yeah, get hold of stuff. Because yeah, like you mentioned, a lot of people, I suppose, yeah, have that build up and then there's a big moment and that's what sets everything off down a different path. But yeah, if people knew if we could make people aware of, yeah, how to tune into themselves and how to catch these feelings and these, you know, this interesting stuff in the biochemistry that's happening before it gets to, you know, I spoke to Tasha Danvers, the Olympic runner recently, and she talked, her way of saying it was to get out in front of it, is to find out what you're feeling and get out in front of it. So like exactly like you said, a bit of a self audit and what am I doing too much of or not enough of? Am I doing enough stuff that makes me happy? Am I doing, you know, enough?
But again, I would say at the moment, who's advocating that? Like, who's on TV advocating that? Who's no in one. Schools advocating? Maybe it's happening now. It didn't happen when I was growing up, you know, and it certainly didn't happen to the generation of men now who take their own lives, you know, more than, you know, any other, you know, as men over the age of 40, they didn't grow up listening to those sorts of messages. They didn't grow up tapping into the how are you feeling today. They grew up in a keep calm and carry on, strong and silent. You know, that's how they grew up. And I think they're the things we need to be so wary of, that actually the strength comes from breaking the silence. That's when you're a quote real man. That this man up culture that we've grown up with, it shouldn't exist. And the fact that it does exist is actually a failure. And it's our failure to have not come up with a better system. And I think it's about finding a better system, a system of self-awareness, a system of empathy, so that you're aware of how you yourself are feeling. But then you're also aware then of how other people are feeling, and you're able to then read into other people, maybe the sort of help or support that they may require, or, you know, that they just want to be completely left on their own and you're not the right person to sort of reach out to them. But I think that's the thing, that empathy and self-awareness combination will get us a lot further, I think, than where we are at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. So do you think that's a sort of, you know, like a being the change thing, you know? So if you can kind of almost get your own house in order and then try and affect positively the people in your circle around you who will then go on, and the ripple in the pond effect and goes out and stuff like that. Do you think is, you know, that's a way to start that maybe?
Yeah. So this is another of those things that you hear and you think, I'm having that. There is a phrase, you know, the thing, they pay it forward. Oh, pay it forward, which is always like, oh, I bought a coffee, so I'm going to give it to somebody who's sleeping rough. Oh, pay it forward. I think, fine, that's kind of what that's becoming. It's a little bit, I think, almost like romanticized by people then film themselves doing it and put it on social media. Yeah. Hey guys, so this guy hadn't eaten for a month, so I bought him a KFC bucket or something. And I filmed the whole thing because I wanted to make myself feel better. Fine, if you want to do that, fine. I'm sure the person was very grateful, but that's probably not what you're doing it for. But instead, I heard the phrase, Tom Hanks used it in an interview, and it was aggressive kindness. And it's just like, be kind, come on guys, be kind. But actually, I don't think of it like, I always think be kinder. So if you're kind, be kinder. If like, go proactive on every point that you can, or at any point that's appropriate. That if someone's struggling, well, I did text them, but they didn't text me back. Right, so you were kind enough to text, but be kinder. Right, so what are you going to do next? What's the next step? What's the next thing you're going to do? I think that's a really proactive approach, that sometimes people think that being kind, oh, come on guys, be kind, which basically means stop racially abusing that footballer on Twitter. Come on guys, be kind. Stop slagging somebody off because of their political beliefs about Brexit or something like that. Whereas actually, be kinder is, right, let's maybe shape a conversation that allows people to express their opinions, not their racist ones, not kind to them, in a way which allows them to see for themselves where those opinions sit in a spectrum. That allows people to see other people's point of view without thinking that those people's point of view are a threat potentially to them or are fundamentally different to them. And I think we can be kinder in all of those things where we can proactively sort of push for that without wanting to try and change the world. You know, if it's two random people arguing on Twitter, you don't have to be kinder to them. You just leave them to it. You know, that's absolutely fine. But actually, if these are issues within a family circle, within an office workspace, and you can be actually part of the change rather than following the, you know, the preset rules of keep yourself to yourself, somebody else's business. Again, they're just sort of taught things. Whereas actually, if your kindness can improve people's lives or improve people's situation, then I think we should do that. And it's not aggressive when you're doing it, but that form of aggressive kindness is, what more can I do? How can I help this person if they need my help and support? And to do it in a way which is proactive constantly. And, you know, as soon as I've nailed that down in my life, I think, you know, I'll be a much better person. I'm not there yet, but I always try and think in those terms.
Yeah, yeah.
So at least then I'll know that you can do more. There's more that you can do.
Yeah, definitely. I've not heard it expressed like that. That's, you know, before. That's awesome. And there is more that we can all do, because yeah, talking is great, but you know, as you know, statistics are going up, and you know, like you say, men do seem pretty good at talking. So there's a missing link between the talking and the help. There's something in there. And if we all take that approach to push forward and look after ourselves and each other a little bit, then that, yeah.
And I think that's the other thing. And that kind of comes from the, you know, why I do the show in the first place. There's a bit in Michael J. Fox's autobiography when he talks about when he gets a Parkinson's diagnosis, and he goes to the Parkinson's Society of the United States. And he kind of goes, just so you know, guys, I know I'm a celeb, but I'm not going to be the one trying to, you know, be front and center of this one. You know, you guys are the... And they went, whoa, no way. You are Michael J. Fox. If somebody sticks a microphone in front of your face and asks you about Parkinson's, you better start talking about it. I think that was one of the other things where I was thinking, right, well, who in the media then is going to start having wider conversations around mental health? And I go, oh, maybe it's me, the bloke who's got his own radio show and a microphone and time that he could set aside for it. I think that's the thing about, well, what more can you do? What steps can you take? What are those things that you can affect? Because I think that's one of the things I noticed with the guests that we speak to. So many of them were looking for a service that they couldn't find. And now they've set up that service so that the next person doesn't have to go through the thing. And I think that thing of being the difference is huge. That you sometimes people just assume that somebody will do something for them, and they don't necessarily assume that actually they might be the person who has to do it or support somebody else's ability to do it, presuming that somebody else has got the skill set to do it on their own. Whereas actually you might be part of a, you know, you might have certain skills that allow you to be, you know, helping them out with a different aspect to it or to get them, and then they'll forever be grateful for it. You've played your part and the difference has been made. So I think that's the other thing of you know, being the difference.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose if you've thought of something, then it's probably you're the one who needs to take that forward, because, you know, someone else hasn't thought of it the way that you've particularly thought of it. Yeah. And, you know, if you spend a lot of time in this space, Mick, you know, every week for 200 episodes, do you have to watch your, because you're consuming a lot of stuff. And I think as what we consume as humans, it really affects our mental state, and we all have to watch what we consume, whether it's visually, audioly, food, whatever. So you're spending so much time in this state, in this area, you're seeing all the stats, you're talking to the people. Do you ever kind of, you know, does it get a bit much sometimes, mate?
Yeah. I think I was kind of wary of that right from the off, where I kind of thought, right, that there might be times, and when we were doing it as part of the live show, I always did it at the end of the show, because I thought that there's always going to be a moment where I almost need to take a little bit of a breather to kind of go. I couldn't just go, that was that story, right, now we're going to talk about tonight's footy or something like that. Yeah. You need to compartmentalize it and almost let it sink in. So I think that was one of the things I always did right from the start is almost have that at the end of the program. We take a photo for the podcast and all that kind of stuff. And then I thank them for the time, and we talk about what they're going to do next and how we can keep in touch. I think that's the thing that I've tried to do with it, to sort of make sure that conversation was the start of that of a relationship, if you like, or to sort of say, right, you now you're part of this community that we've created. So make sure you're on the Facebook group and make sure you're in, you know, the conversations and make sure you've got my email address. Tell me when your fundraiser's coming up. I'll give it a mention on the show. So they then become part of the existence. And I've always tried to sort of build that in because I think that then allows me to sort of sleep soundly, thinking I didn't just go, right, here you are, boom, you're in the middle of, you know, a radio show, you're in the middle of a podcast, and now you're off and I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah.
But actually, you were part of something which actually we'll come back to, we'll revisit, or if there are new elements you want to talk about, or there's something different, we can have these conversations too. I don't think I've ever necessarily sort of had to take time away to sort of, you know, really deal with particular issues. There have been some things where I've thought, wow, that's heavy. And I previously worked with a couple of really good producers where we just kind of like talked it through. I've been given a couple of things as well from people who've lost loved ones as well, which that they've sort of entrusted with me, which I've always sort of kept to one side as sort of a reminder of the responsibility that I have, as much as anything. But I think that kind of comes with the territory. And I think that's when I just try and think, right, what do I do responsibly? That I never tried to play the counselor. I never tried to play the psychologist. It's just about having that conversation. And I think through having the conversation, because it's an honest conversation, and because I'm doing it sort of journalistically, but hopefully in an ethical way, and I'm reading their sort of pushbacks or the things they don't want to talk about, I'm then able to walk away from that conversation saying they were happy to speak. I'm happy with sort of my sort of judgment in that interview in terms of, you know, I didn't sort of go, tell me how you felt.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Tell me how bad it got. Come on. Now's the time to speak. I don't do any of that. So I don't get a sense of like guilt from doing the interviews. It's very much the consent is very much there. So I always think, right, well, actually, hopefully that conversation has opened a door, has opened a window, has opened somebody's ears or mind to a particular topic. So I can walk away from any conversation that I have thinking that has brought a bit of positivity.
Yeah.
So there's no negativity that comes from having had this conversation, which allows me to then, you know, sleep at night thinking my job isn't, you know, making people's lives worse. Cause I think in the main, the conversations are designed to hopefully make people's lives better.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And what's the plan moving forward, mate? Are we just carrying on and see how many more 100 episodes are coming out? Is there anything?
Yeah. Yeah. I think as much as anything, we've done a lot more recently. It's just me now doing the show. I don't have the producer sadly anymore. But in terms of the politics side of things, I think the sort of big movements are going to come on this one as well. So as much as anything, when I'm having conversations with senior figures, because started off, I was speaking to small charities or individuals, but you know, if you look at who's been on the podcast recently, it can be the Secretary of State, it can be the, you know, the shadow minister, it can be chief execs of major sort of UK charities and so on and so forth. And I think that's the thing that I'm mindful of, whereby there's hopefully a position to influence how we might move forward. And if I have a conversation that's particularly poignant over a particular issue, I can then raise that with certain people who can then action something and make a change.
Yeah.
Because I think if I do it for another 200 episodes and it's just like, well, at least this guy's talking about mental health, I see that. I would see that as a failure. It comes down to that thing about what more can you do, the be kind of thing, the proactive thing, that I'm always thinking, I've got to do more. You know, they've got to be, you know, sometimes you say, if one person, you know, contacts a charity as a result of the conversation, then that's great. And it is. But wouldn't it be great if two people did it? Wouldn't it be great if four people did it? Wouldn't it be good if actually that conversation was heard by a politician who then said, we probably need to action on this one and change the law that meant that X, Y, Z didn't need to occur. I think that's the thing where I'm thinking, well, where can it go? It can go as far as we want it to go. We shouldn't be limited by a preconception that it's just a conversation and talking never gets us anywhere. Actually, the conversations can go as far and wide as we want them to be, and we can achieve anything. And if someone's got a good idea, then that good idea should win. You know, that's the good idea that we should take forward. And I think there's a like-minded sense of like-minded group of individuals who I can almost sort of, you know, discuss sort of issues with? Such a body said we should have this. Such a body said this service needs to exist. Is that something you've had experience of? Well, actually, such a body setting up that service. Great, let's get them in contact with them. So at least they're, you know, and I think that's the role that I see the show having in the future, that it's not just about that conversation. It's also about creating that momentum and building that sense of community.
Using conversation as a catalyst for change and for action. Yeah, I love that, mate. That's a fantastic soundbite there to kind of wrap things up, mate. So thank you so much for joining me today, Mick. I really appreciate your time. I love that conversation. There's a lot there to unpack, but it was brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it. Good luck as well in terms of building your own episode repertoire.
Thank you very much.
It feels like at the start every episode feels like we've got another one, but you get to the point where you'll go, right, okay, we're into a groove here, let's keep them coming, let's keep it rolling, and then people will start, you know, really feeding back and giving you new ideas and going in different places, and then absolutely I think there's plenty more opportunities to have these conversations.
Oh, fantastic. No, thank you, mate. I very much appreciate that. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, mate. Cheers, mate.
Listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.